It's Friday, July 31st, 2015, and welcome to episode 179 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Josh Abel.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And that's right, we have a special guest here today. Josh Abel from our Information Security Department is here to talk a little bit about
Fishing today. We're getting back into the swing of back to school, and as with back to school, we see a big increase in fishing, and so just wanted to highlight that today.
And that's fishing with a PH.
Yes, fishing with a PH.
Yeah. So, as normal, you know, this back to school time, there's going to be a ramp up in fishing attempts. So Josh is here to educate us a little bit about some of the things that we can do to protect ourselves about that. We'll also have a segment on our summer updates and changes that are occurring here on campus over the summer. There's a lot of changes for Office 365, so we'll have a discussion about that. And then on the IT side of things, Josh, we have two or three things to talk about.
Sure. Yeah, we've been making some big changes with our virtual desktops that we offer for students, just giving some software availability to them in their dorm rooms and their apartments, wherever they're at. We've been working through a network refresh, just trying to keep our network fit and running at full capacity. And the last change that we've been making is our password manager, implementing that over the summer and looking to get our students and faculty enrolled as soon as they get back to campus.
Okay, so a lot of changes there occurring over the summer. So sit back, relax, and here we go. First today, we're bringing back our Security Spotlight feature, and we have a special guest, Josh Awalt. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. I thought we would bring you in, Mike Gioia, who is our previous Information Security Officer here at EIU. You've taken over his role here at EIU, and I thought it would be a good time to once again bring back the Security Spotlight and talk about some of those things that we need to do as teachers and staff members and faculty just to kind of protect ourselves and protect our network, since these are all shared resources. And just want to invite you over just to talk about a few things. And I know coming back to school, phishing attempts always seem to go up. It seems to be a prime time.
Yeah. Over the last summer, we've seen it kind of decrease like about 7 or 8 a month. But definitely as soon as we get into school, end of August, usually we're talking about 7 or 8 a day. And
yeah.
So it's very prevalent.
Yeah. So we want to particularly be, you know, on our guard against some of those attempts. And we have a system in place where we can report those to our Information Technology Services Department. And that way your office can, what do you do, kind of block them or put them on
a
blacklist?
Yeah. What we like to do is, as far as our education for our faculty and staff, is to say, I mean, if you see anything suspicious as far as an email is concerned, definitely report it. And we pass out a web address that they can forward a message to. And once our staff receives that, what we do is we actually go into our email system, and we can block the sender mm-hmm. that's sending that out
right.
that are potentially harmful.
Sometimes you think, well, somebody else reported it, but it's better to be safe and report that out there so that you're kind of protecting your neighbor. And as well, do not click on the links. You know, we're constantly saying that, particularly if you think something's suspicious.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's a great service, and I know as soon as we see that, I'm always reporting those, and hopefully that's protecting, you know, users in the future. So. What other things, as far as phishing, some kind of things to look at within an email? I know in the past, they get very clever, and they'll kind of spoof your identity and things.
Oh, for sure.
And just be on the lookout, whatever school you're at, school X, that you have an email from the school X IT department. You need to change your password immediately. Go here, fill out this form, and reset your password. And that, you know, for a computer savvy person, that throws up red flags immediately.
Sure.
But, you know, for an average person, they might be fooled by that.
Yeah, they've gotten very clever, especially over the last couple of years. And it can be really, really hard to detect a phishing email at times.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying it's an easy task by any means. I'm on Facebook, as I'm sure everyone else is. And I received an email one day. And it was a comment from a friend, and they're like, oh, you click on the link, and it said, hey, you need to log in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, maybe my, you know, phone just need to re-log into Facebook. So I logged into Facebook thinking nothing of
it. The page looked like Facebook.
And it was a spoof. And my account got compromised. And instantly, as soon as it happened, it posted out something to my friend. And I immediately was like, oh, I got to change my password. Mm-hmm. Got to go through this whole ordeal. So it's definitely something even us, I'd say me as a tech person.
Oh, yes.
I'm very susceptible to it.
Yeah, it can happen to anybody. So that's what we always have to have our guard up.
Yeah.
Another thing to kind of to protect us against that, as far as like the passwords and things, I'm always hearing this two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just did it the other day to a personal account that I had, and it is a bit of a hassle.
Yes.
I use my phone to text back and forth. But how does that protect me?
Two-factor authentication, it just takes it a step further to say to authenticate, you just can't just have your password, but you also have additional piece of information. Some of the more sophisticated systems, it's like a fingerprint or something of that nature.
Or in my case, it was a phone.
Right, yeah. A lot of times it's more or less like it's called a software token is what it is, and it just gives you like a 5-6-digit number, and you put that additional piece of information in when you log in, and it just... It definitely helps out with making sure you are who you say you are. So if someone else was to compromise your account, steal your password, well, they're not going to have that additional piece of information. So it's going to protect your account because they won't have that second authentication.
Right. Code. But they could, if they would guess or find my password out some way, that's why you suggest changing your password periodically.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and that's something we have looked for. We put a new password management system in place, and when we did that, we reviewed our authentication policy we have here at Eastern because we did have certain groups of individuals that were not changing their password just because it's never been a requirement. Mm-hmm. And so bringing those individuals in to say, hey, it's important, even if it's once a year, for you to change your password because... You know, we never know.
Right.
A lot of us use the same password, not just for our school accounts, but we use them for our personal accounts.
Right.
And I mean, if you look at the news, how many companies are being compromised daily, and your account information and sometimes the same passwords you use here at school are also used for those accounts. So, you know, someone can just look you up, do a Google search on you, see where you work, and they can be trying your password out. So it's important to constantly keep that changed and updated.
Yeah, I remember talking to Mike, having the same conversation of things. It's like, I really need to go change some passwords.
I know. It seems like a daunting task, though, because I'm like, how many accounts do I have out there?
Yeah.
But
one of the reasons to do that, too, is I kind of have a system that I think would be somewhat hard to crack. But sometimes people don't. You know, you always hear about pet names or, you know, anniversary dates and things like that. That if somebody, what do they call that whenever they're doing, social engineering.
Social engineering, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, we leave these digital footprints out there along the line. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot sometimes to go out there. I mean, just a Google search will find, you know, a ton of information, particularly like in Facebook and things too, with your friends. And then, you know, Facebook's constantly changing their terms of service and policies, and, you know, what you originally signed up for may have evolved since then. So,
right.
And, you know, I'm active on Twitter as my social network and things. So I'm always seeing, you know, just every day back and forth, and we call it a professional learning network. I use it for educational purposes, but you get to learn a lot that, you know, people I've never met, but I consider them friends, even though we've, you know, never met face to face. So we need to be careful out there. Also, coming back to school, in our case, we're a university, but this is also true in K-12. You know, we have very large numbers of students that we serve. So we've got students coming in, coming back, and then just that first week of school and the week before school, getting people signed into the accounts, you know, registration systems and things like that. There is a peak demand on our IT department, and a lot of it is nothing more than a password reset. Hey, I forgot my password type thing. So that's your password manager that you're talking about, trying to do some of those self-service. Can you just speak just a little bit, because this is pretty common across other universities and schools, what we call self-service, when you do a password reset, they ask you to do those security questions.
Yes.
Can you just give a little bit of guidelines about what to do and maybe not what to do?
Sure. Yeah. That's a very common question and something that definitely can be just hard to make secure, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's not really a good way to put that. But Because a lot of the security questions that are out there are canned security questions that are across the board.
Right.
Like, what was my first car I drove? You know, what's my mother's maiden name? Mm-hmm. Certain pieces of information that if someone knew you or could...
Social engineer,
mm-hmm. look at your Facebook account, might be able to come up with answers to those questions. So a few things that we've done, at least with our password management, is we went out and we picked some very, very specific questions. And I'm sure certain systems don't allow them to be changed. I know certain passwords, they're canned questions.
Right.
The company sets those that you purchase the solution from, and that's it. Mm-hmm. The one we went with gave us some flexibility. And so what we looked at is we made that if you were going to answer questions, you had to answer two questions, because a lot of systems only let you answer one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's a, you know, it changes, but it's not always mm-hmm. very secure. If I, you know, I find your mother's maiden name, well, that's
right.
real easy, but.
And again, for the average user, you know, another common one, what was your, you know, father's occupation or
right.
something like that. It's like, that's pretty easy to find out.
Father's middle name mm-hmm. is a big one. Grandfather's first name. A lot in relation to family, which that information is usually very public that mm-hmm. you could find out. So what we looked at is we created some custom questions. I think one was like, who was your first kiss? And I know that's kind of laugh. It's, you know, it's a different question to ask, but definitely something that most people wouldn't know about you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I see people that they try to, well, I'm going to answer this question differently. Like, it's say, what's my dog's name?
Sounds good, but six yeah. months from now.
Yeah, you're never going to remember what that is. So,
right.
Yeah, it can definitely be kind of a hard thing to do to mm-hmm. come up with those good questions. But if you have the option to make up your own security question, I don't know if the systems would allow for that. If you do a quick Google search for just top security questions or things of that nature, there are some really good ones out there. I wish I had the website to provide, but
yeah.
Kind of a resource that we use. And
we can provide those in the show notes later. That's no problem.
Sure. Yeah, I'll provide that then.
Okay.
I'll get that. And it was really good. Came up with a lot of good questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're about out of time here for this segment, but can you just talk briefly, because passwords are kind of that, you know, I call it the keys to the kingdom
sure.
type thing. Just some general guidelines out there as we come back and people are resetting. And we have some requirements, you know,
correct.
Uppercase, lowercase. But could you just talk just a little bit more generically out there for everybody?
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of times we've trained ourselves and our password systems to be very specific. We tell you, pick a word, add a number and a special character, and there's your secure password.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we've done is we've made it really easy for someone to crack your password
right.
because we can make you conform mm-hmm. and push that, I guess, idea of this is what a password looks like. I read an article and it was really good because it said a lot of times we try to overthink passwords when it really doesn't have to be that hard. And something that my old boss, he posed this question to me, and I was kind of curious. He's like, what is more secure, a short sentence or an 8 to 10 character password with, you know, upper lowercase numbers? And I was like, oh, well, that 10 character password, that's the most secure. He's like, well, you do know that that sentence actually meets all the same complexity requirements, and it's easier for you to remember, less likely for you to forget. And so, like, the dog is brown. Well,
mm-hmm.
you have uppercase, you have special characters with the spaces in there,
right.
you have a special character, the period at the end of the sentence.
Right.
And a lot of times that's all that you need. You have to meet a few of the requirements, not all of them. But it's definitely something you're not going to forget.
Right.
And, you know, 6 months from now when you're trying to remember your password,
right.
if you don't use it a whole
as
lot.
As long as you comply with the length requirements.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
sometimes they shorten those quite a bit. I mean, some systems is as short as 8 characters. I
correct.
Think maybe
yes.
even 6. But kind of goes back to those algorithms. If you do a brute force attack, the longer the password and the more combinations, the
correct.
More complex. And
that I think most systems can handle, but there
yeah.
are certain limitations
yeah.
out there for that.
Okay. So as we head back to school, and like I said, I think I need to do this myself, because it's always just kind of a good idea, just kind of have these seasonal things, you know, as we go back to school, there's just a routine that we have. So changing your password is definitely a good one. And I do know that periodically here at EIU, we are forced to change our passwords on the X number of days
correct.
Type thing. So that's good. It, you know, keeps us kind of aware that's necessary. And then as we approach school, be aware that phishing attacks are going to increase,
yes.
And report to whatever system, your IT department that you may have, that may help protect future people that may be clicking on that link. And the thing that, again, I'm not sure that the average user understands is the work that's necessary on the back end if somebody is compromised, mm-hmm. to go through. And that's something that the Information Security Department deals with on a daily basis. So it is not without consequence, and there's reasons that we provide the recommendations that, sure. you do here. So
yeah, if I could throw in just one last thing,
sure.
with it, if there's an email that you're unsure about, because sometimes we try to do our best as IT professionals not to send out emails that look like phishing,
right?
But the easiest thing you can do is just call.
Yeah, just call your help desk.
Call your help desk. If you get it even from a company like your bank or something like that, that looks suspicious to you, look up the bank's phone number online. Don't use the email or whatever number's right. in the email. Look the bank up online so you get the correct number. Call them and just say, hey, I received this email. This is what it says. Is this legitimate? Because they're going to know whether or not that's a good email. And that's an easy way to protect yourself from phishing.
Yeah.
Just an easy
yeah. way. Good advice and a good way to wrap it up. So as we head back to school, let's be safe out there. Up next, we have our summer updates and changes segment. And as we have progressed through the summer, there's been a number of changes to all kinds of different systems here at EIU, and I'm sure at K-12 schools and other university levels as well. But one thing that we completed last year, we rolled out Office 365 for all faculty, staff, and students here at EIU. So we've had right at a year, a little over a year, for students. And I think our faculty went to Office 365 last fall. So as we go back, Office 365 is kind of one of those software as a service. So right. it's a little bit different paradigm. And they've really been ramping it up, and constant changes are going on. So I just want to mention a few here for our EIU folks. The same is probably also, in fact, I know it's also true for the Google Apps for Education. I know a lot of our K-12 schools are using Google and Chromebooks. So Office 365 is somewhat similar in that regard. But essentially, in case of Office 365, that's a Microsoft product. And Google Apps, of course, is Google. But those companies kind of control the upgrade cycle and when they roll out new features. And just because it is a software as a service, particularly the end users, you may walk into the office someday and it's like, oh, what's that new icon? Or, oh, they just changed the menu and moved it from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. So just be aware that a number of changes have gone on. And in particular for our Office 365, I want to mention three or four things here that I'm really excited about some of these. We do have access now to what's called OneNote Classroom notebooks and the OneNote Staff notebooks. So if you're a OneNote user, those are two types of collaborative systems that allow you to easily collaborate. In the case of OneNote Classroom, you can set it up if you're a faculty teacher, set up your classroom and put your students in there. And you have like basically three different types of sections. You have a collaboration section where everybody has access. You have a content section where only the teacher can access it. And then you have an individual student where a student can share a notebook with the teacher. And then share information back and forth. So it's a really good system for notebooks and keeping track of notes. So that's brand new. The other thing that's brand new that they're rolling out this summer is Office 365 video, and we're just now in the very beginning pilot stages of that. I'm excited about that because, again, in K-12 and then also at the university level, over the last 5 years, flipped classrooms have become very popular. So what a lot of faculty will do is record like a little PowerPoint segment or slideshow and then post it to the web. And it's very, very easy to do using the Office Mix plugin with PowerPoint. Literally with Office 365, this Office Mix plugin for PowerPoint 2013, it's literally just click record, turn on your webcam if you want to have a talking head video or whatever in there. And then you have your choice whether you want to do a webcam or just record your screen. It records inking annotations, highlights, and things like that as well. When you're finished with it, literally, there's a button that says Published Office 365 Video. Click. it's published, and then the students that have access to that get it. Another one that's not rolled out yet, but something I think that educators will be particularly interested in is a Skype for Business service, which is allowing basically groups, and the information I've seen, up to 10,000 people. It's like a webinar type thing, so you can set up like a Skype session webinar, record, and then again publish that to whatever video service you use, whether it's Office 365, YouTube, or if you have a different webinar system. And then all of these have implications for teaching and learning, because they can be applied directly in the classroom. And the other benefit, we just came off the discussion with, you know, our security and passwords and the importance, you know, having access to all of these services. It makes it very easy once you have that common directory of students, again, whether it's Google Apps or Office 365, you can share things out so easily. So that's something going on. And then the other thing, we've over the last 2-3 years or so, we've been implementing what's called VDI, which is our Virtual Device Initiative. And I know, Josh, you're a fan of that.
Yes.
Can you talk just a little bit about some of the changes that are occurring there and what we're doing?
Sure. Yeah, we've definitely been kind of ramping up our VDI deployment, and we're looking to use that more and more as students kind of do a distance learning and make it easily available to them, because a lot of times we run into the issue where we can only provide resources to students when they're here on campus.
Right.
There's a few web pages and certain web apps that we can provide, but some of the core applications that students use, it's very hard to, unless you're going to install them on their personal devices, and a lot of times that's a licensing issue, that there's just that hurdle to overcome. And VDI gives us the ability to jump that hurdle. And we've looked, especially like through our geology department here, where we have some pretty high-intensive applications that they use to do mapping.
For graphics.
And graphics. And actually through our VDI solution, students can sit at home in a dorm room somewhere, log in through VDI, and use this high-end application with, which is pretty intensive to graphics, and, you know, have that available to them.
Yeah,
so,
and in simplest terms, I look at it, it's like a virtual computer.
Correct.
So you're going there. It does require a piece of client software to install first. But the beauty of it is you're accessing that virtual device where, again, our IT department's done all the work, installed, in this case, a geology mapping program, and all students have access to that.
Correct.
So it makes it much easier than, you know, kind of going back to the old days where we had the lab and you had installed on 30 different computers, and then the student could only, you know, they only have, you know, 1 hour of lab time. This method, it's been very successful. This method allows you 24/7, 365 access, as long as we're not doing maintenance on the servers.
Correct.
So that's something, you know, very exciting. And then the other thing that we use here in the ITC, it's also great for, we use these little terminals, so they're much reduced cost than buying a PC.
Correct, yeah. I think they're only a couple $100 for the actual thin client itself, and it has about a 10-year warranty on it itself, but it allows it to connect to the VDI infrastructure, and just kind of a cheaper replacement, especially as all of us, at least here in Illinois, are going through kind of budget crunches and things of that nature. It's harder to come up with the funds to buy a brand new PC.
And a couple other benefits, we have a lab upstairs with them. The other benefit is I think they only use like 8 watt of electricity, which is, again, a cost whenever you think of thousands of computers spread across the university. And then they're also secure because they do not contain a hard drive, so there's no local storage. Everything's accessed over the network. So it makes it nice. And then the other thing, from a lab manager perspective, you can update one image for this lab of 30 virtual devices, and you do it once.
Yes.
Versus if it were a physical lab, you do it 30 individual times.
Yeah, and the turnaround time of once you make a change is you have a student log off and log back in, and they've got the update or whatever that looks like. And it's very seamless.
Yeah. So over the years, you know, with the software as a service like Office 365 and Google Apps and things and browser access, as the IT infrastructure has improved, it's made all these things possible. You know, that's kind of the key. The network's grown. And speaking of network, our IT department's also doing a network edge refresh and upgrading some of the core switches and a lot of the wireless access points. We kind of have, a stage process out there to do that. And then I guess the other big thing this summer that affects everybody, you mentioned the password manager.
Right, yeah. We looked to reduce a little bit of cost with a password manager we were using, and we went with one that gave us a little more functionality as far as how we could, like the questions that we brought up earlier and things of that nature. So looking to get all of our students enrolled, get all their security questions in. So our help desk is going to be a little busy this fall semester, but we're excited about the new product.
Yeah. And then, you know, today's July 31st, so tomorrow was August 1st. And kind of the alarm bells start going off because we're in the back-to-school season. And I think we start back-to-school the 24th, so we're like, you know, T-minus 24 days. But if you take off weekends, it's like T-minus 15 days. And I'm just thinking right now we're kind of in that home stretch out there. There's going to be a lot of updates because these last two or three weeks is our last opportunity before we have a lot of users back on the systems. So I know here in the ITC we've got several carts and iPad carts to check out. So all those are going to be updated with all the updates, all of our labs, all of our classrooms, and we're talking thousands of computers will be touched, you know, in the, across the university. In the next 3 weeks. So it's a busy time, a lot of that, and we particularly make it invisible. You know, we don't want any problems with things because then that's, you know, something's going wrong if you're noticing some of these things. So we do a lot of this preventive maintenance to get everything up to date and in as good a shape as we can for the start of school and ready for our students. So that wraps up some of the summer updates. I'm sure at your schools you're going through similar things. So good luck with the start of school, and we wish you a successful school year. My technology pick of the week this week is Windows 10. It's July 31st, so on July 29th they released Windows 10 to the general public. And it's out there in the wild now, and there are many, many people doing upgrades. I just saw a report. I'll put a link in the show notes. I think they're up to over 14 million users here the first day. So from 0 to 14 million on a new operating system. Implications for security there as well. Everybody getting up to speed on new operating systems and things. So just some things. One of the things that I think is our responsibility as IT professionals out there is when some of these major new announcements, we need to be familiar with them. So I've been paying a little bit of attention to it, and there are some new features out there in Windows 10 that's not been available. And some of this, in fact, this first one does require new hardware to implement, but you may be interested in this. I don't know if you've read much about this, but the Windows 10 Hello.
I'm not very familiar with it. I saw a few of the feature sets that they had, but
it's basically face recognition software.
Okay.
It requires an Intel RealSense camera. Mm-hmm. So literally, you sit down in front of your computer, it recognizes your face, and there's no password.
Oh, wow.
So that's probably going to make some security people, you know, a little bit happier with that. No more sticky notes on the monitor or whatever.
Oh, for sure.
I'm doing that. But that does require new hardware. So that's some of the improvements. You know, we talked about that two-factor and authentication and things. And, you know, some people use tokens.
Yes.
So in this case, you know, thumb readers have been around. Biometrics have been around for a while. So this is kind of an evolution of the biometrics out there.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, they supposedly this camera, I don't know if it has infrared or something, you just can't hold up a picture of somebody, you know, to log in or whatever. So the other feature, which I've been using probably for a couple of years on the Windows phone, is Cortana, which is like a digital personal assistant that is voice recognition, basically. So I can, you know, say, hey, Cortana, what's on my schedule today? And she'll go out, retrieve my Outlook information and read it back. Or I can say, hey, Cortana, make an appointment for next Tuesday at 9 a.m. Automatically puts it in. So, you know, the voice recognition systems are coming along. Just mention, because it's impacting a little bit, on rolling out, you know, 14 million users overnight, essentially, Microsoft reserves something like 40 terabits per second of data out there. If you just stop and think about the massive job that is to deliver an operating system to 14 million different people in a 24-hour period, it's just mind-boggling to me. And we've all had network, you know, slowdowns and things like that. So we may be experiencing those. I know whenever we've done some of the iOS upgrades, I think it was iOS 8, you know, I noticed it here on campus because everybody just rushes out. You know, it's a new thing. Everybody gets it once, which there's only so much bandwidth capacity. That's set records already for as far as internet usage. And then the other thing within Windows 10 for the power users out there, you can have multiple desktops out there. Of course, Unix and Linux systems have had those for years, but somebody might be interested in that. So I'm interested in getting, I've got a couple of my personal computers sitting there waiting for the, I got the little Windows logo sitting there waiting for them to give the green light because they're rolling this out in stages. So I still got some computers to upgrade, but it looks like a pretty solid operating system so far, and the general reports have been positive for the most parts. But like anything else, there's going to be bugs out there whenever we deal with that. So that's my pick, Windows 10, brand new on July 29th. Okay, Josh, what do you have for us?
Just to kind of keep in line with our security topic that we talked about with phishing, I have a website that I just wanted to highlight. Okay. It is phishing.org, and that's phishing.org. I looked through it, and it's something that came through on one of my security feeds. And it's just a really good resource that if you have additional questions about phishing, or if you know you just want to learn more and be more educated about it, a good resource to use. They have a lot of information out there about phishing and just ways that you can prevent it and protect yourself, and just move forward.
Okay.
Go through it. So definitely check it out.
All right. Thank you very much. That wraps it up for episode 179 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. If you have a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment in the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. I would like to thank Josh Awalt for coming in today and sharing some of his knowledge about information security with us. Thank you, Josh, for that. So until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Josh Awalt.
Keep on learning.